Mr. Connor is a registered representative and managing principal with Connor Wealth Management. Securities offered through Commonwealth Financial Network, member FINRA, SIPC. Opinions expressed on this show are strictly those of the host, its guests, and callers, and not those of WLVL, its management, staff, or sponsors. Nothing contained in this program should be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell a security, and if applicable, only after the prospectus has been read and understood by the customer. These decisions can only be made after consideration of an investor's investment objective and the investment suitability.
Good morning. Today is Friday, November 5th, and we're here with Eric Connors from Connors Wealth Management. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Great. How are you?
I am happy. Happy to be here and happy to be speaking with you this morning. It's got some nice sunshine out there finally after this crazy freezing cold morning that we had.
Yeah, good hard frost out there.
Yeah, it was. So I got to start out with, what in the world's going on with Jack Eichel? What and the Sabres? I know you're a big Sabres guy, aren't you?
I am painfully a big Sabres fan. Yeah, the end of the Eichel era, long time coming, and sort of his interviews after yesterday's trade to Vegas sort of gave some proof to the old rumors that he had wanted to get out of Buffalo earlier than his injury, and he came out and said for the year prior that he was after the GM had gotten fired and the coach had gotten fired again, people in the front office had gotten fired, that he was not looking to stick around for a rebuild. So Sabres went out, tried to appease him and signed Taylor Hall and whatnot, and then that all fell apart, and then he got injured, and he's not backing off the idea of, I don't want to stick around for a rebuild. And then you got the neck injury to go into the whole mix. So I guess they tried to make the best of a bad situation. The trade, look, you're never going to get fair value in what you think of trading a potential rehabbed superstar. But the fact is you're trading a guy with a bad neck injury. And so you're not going to get a Brinks truck haul in return for him. So you got a decent NHL player in Alex Tuch, a decent prospect in Peyton Krebs, and a first rounder and a second rounder, which, you know, spin the roulette wheel and maybe it comes through as decent players and maybe it doesn't. So
right, but at least we got rid of some damaged goods.
Exactly. You know, the
with
fact,
an ego problem.
Right. The fact is he didn't want to be here, and he wanted a surgery that the Sabres weren't going to let him have. And so there's only one resolution in that situation, which is you trade him away. The other team lets him get the surgery that he wants. You get, 4 years or 5 years of salary cap relief because he was going to make $10 million a year, and you just sort of shrug your shoulders and move on. There's just not any other relief from that situation. And not that you did it to set me up like this, but I would say it's also sort of reminiscent in terms of making a little bit of a mistake in your investment portfolio,
right?
Where
count your losses.
You sometimes hold a stock or a mutual fund, or you go into a sector, like say the energy sector or the tech sector or the healthcare sector, you know, and you've got ideas in your head of why it's going to work out, and sometimes, you know, the world and the economy just sort of prove you wrong on that trade. And so at some point you just cut your losses and you move forward. And that's ultimately right. What the Sabres did. And it's, again, sort of, you didn't set me up for it like this, but it's a lesson in portfolio management as well,
sure.
Which is just not everything you do, not every decision you make is going to be correct with your money. And sometimes it's just limit the damage and move forward.
Right. Oh, talking about moving forward, we are having a record week in this stock situation. What is going on? I mean, well, we're not complaining by any stretch, are we?
No.
Holy smokes. These numbers are really impressive.
There's a lot of record highs. I think we're now above 60 record highs for the year, which is really incredible. And today, being the first Friday in the month, we got a jobs report. And I'll tell you, there's a little bit of hints in there that sort of tell you why the market's hitting those highs, right? Like, so the employment numbers for August got revised higher by about 120,000.
Okay.
The jobs numbers for September got revised higher by about 120,000. And then the jobs number for October, and this would be the first report for October, obviously, mm-hmm. was really good, with non-farm payrolls increasing by 531,000 jobs in October. And the estimate was 450. And I tend to say to people, look, they're just, you know, they're sort of pulling the estimates out of the sky. They're not exactly sure what that number right. should be. But by any stretch, creating 530,000 jobs in the month is fantastic.
That's substantial, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. So, you know, years ago, 2017, 2018, 2019, the pre-pandemic level, I would tell you when I'd come here that if we could get up around 200,000 jobs a month, that's a really solid number to show that the economy is still growing. So if you look at the jobs number for this year, coming out of the pandemic and then with the Delta wave and, you know, reopenings and closings and on and on and on, we've got a really, really strong job economy right now. We know that unemployment is low. We know that salaries and incomes have gone up, and we know that job openings are still really high. And like I point out, those are all good signs in terms of where is the strength coming from in the market. The market wants to see economic growth, and it's getting that growth. And so while on any given day, and you know, market, it, say it's a coin flip, but what we've seen throughout the year with all these record highs, you know, new high, new high, new high happening over and over, you're seeing it in terms of job growth, economic growth, high profits for these companies, and the inflation that we've seen into the economy at this point has only been a benefit for the growth factor, right? Right. Again, like we've talked how the jobs on transit used to advertise for $12.50 an hour. Well, now they're advertising for $15 and $16 an hour.
Sure.
That puts more dollars in circulation, put more money in people's pockets, and opens the way to spend more money, which all results in higher profits throughout the chain. Obviously, that trade-off comes with spots of inflation that we don't like, which is every time we go and fill up our gas tank, we're not fond of paying the price we are at. But like I say many times here on the show, there is no actual shortage of oil. It doesn't ultimately matter if we're pumping it from North Dakota or Texas or the Gulf of Mexico or if we import some. There's no actual shortage within the world. So it's really just a demand issue. And the demand issue comes from people getting back out into life and the factories operating at increasing levels, right? Some mm-hmm. places are still not at their highest productivity. But all that growth comes into play where that's how we're seeing these highs. And so I will always say, sort of not to sound like a broken record, but I will always say, look, we can get to a spot of overstretched valuations and we might see some sort of correction in the market. But that in big picture terms, if we keep getting growth, we'll probably keep seeing the market move higher. It doesn't mean it races higher, but at least we move higher.
Right. Yeah. Now, there's some people that are grumbling about the Keystone Pipeline being shut down is partially the cause of these gas price increases. What's your take on that?
Yeah, we had a caller, and it's just dead wrong.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah. It didn't have a drop of oil coming through it, so no, none of the current pricing pertains to whether that did or didn't get completed. It's not that oil, that energy that was going to go through there was going to go down to the New Orleans area and get shipped overseas. It was for export. So it's a political battle that people are just dead wrong on.
Okay, so there's no relevance at all for that.
No.
It goes right back to supply and demand.
It is. You know, the fact that people drill in Oklahoma and Texas and even in Pennsylvania and West Virginia, there's plenty of oil coming out, and that Keystone Pipeline just has no relevance to it whatsoever.
Good. Well, we have a caller. Let's see what's going on here. Good morning. You are on WLVL with Eric Connor. What's your question this morning?
Morning, Eric.
Morning.
I saw yesterday's story about Zillow and the fact that they had dropped quite a bit. And I guess I was just looking for more explanation if you're familiar with what happened with them and why their stock dropped so low.
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't have it on one of my talking points for the week, but that it's great that you asked about it. So Zillow, as some internet savvy people would know, is a great place to go online, and you can look at your house, find out its value, or you can, if you're thinking of purchasing a house that's up for sale, you can go to Zillow and check out the details on it. When was it built, and what's its assessed valuation? What are the details in terms of square footage and all that sort of jazz? So going back a little bit of time, Zillow has tried to figure out new markets to head into, new ways to expand their business. And one of the things they wanted to do, which I sort of shook my head at the time of thinking, well, I don't know where they'd have the expertise to do this, but okay. They were trying to get into the home flipping business on a grand scale. So they were trying to buy hundreds and then thousands of homes and, you know, fix them up, paint them up, roof, mechanicals, and resell them at a profit. And the idea that they sort of had was that their algorithms and all of their analysis would lead them to know what price to pay so that when you then factor in all the labor and supply – that they'd still be able to create a profit margin that was acceptable to them.
Okay.
And as we know, the price of homes has really risen over the last 18 months. And and what they found is that they could not successfully do that at all. And and so they've decided to exit the business. And I forget what the round number was for what they think it's costing them, but I believe it was more than $100 million of damage to their overall bottom line in what they were trying to do. And I won't accuse them of doing anything that is illegal or anything like that, but I would say that their lack of information in prior earnings reports led to the big reaction in this report when they decided to get out of the business. I think a lot of their investors that were in the stock did not know that that announcement was coming. So when it came and the numbers were dreadful, the stock cratered. And I think what in the first day of the announcement, it was down 25%. And then I think the next day,
that's what I saw.
And then I think the next day it was down another 10 or 15%. I don't know where it's at today.
It's down again today, too.
There you go. You know, the way to think of that is people were in it with a level of confidence of what the game plan was moving forward. And in that one earnings announcement, management just blew it to smithereens. And now you have sort of like a cascading effect of sales. And it's people that are just getting out at different price levels, right? So the initial people getting out are like what's known in the investing game as the weakest hands, right? They were maybe in at the highest price, and they were like, "Oh, geez, I'm just getting out. I don't like that news. I'm just getting out." And then in the second day, what you have are the people that aren't paying attention to it as much. They come home at night, they check their headlines or read the news or whatever. So on the second day, you then have that second level of people putting in selling pressure. And so it often takes several days for all of those shareholders that want to get out or that are annoyed or digesting the information to finally flush through that sale process. And it's why it's a great example of, for me, when clients call and a piece of bad news is out and they want to buy it on that first day. And I will always tell them, look, it's usually dangerous to play a stock drop on its first day because the selling pressure usually keeps coming forward for a few days at a minimum. And so you kind of want to look and say, all right, I'd be really comfortable down at X dollars per share. If it gets there, then I'm interested. I don't want to just buy it because it was down a bunch yesterday. I want to see more of the action after that first day. I want to be able to sort of see where the support is coming in, where the volume's coming in to shore up support on the share price.
Yeah, and with Zillow, I always wondered, how were they making their money other than this flipping that you were just describing? How were they making their money? Because from what I've experienced with Zillow, everything that they do is free. There must be something in there where they're getting a profit center.
Yeah, so their revenue is you'd sort of call it the advertising revenue model, where when you go in and you look at a house, and down at the bottom when you've scrolled through all the details on the property, it'll ask if you're interested in the house, and it'll often make a referral to a real estate agent. And you sort of can see that it's with a certain company or with one or two agents from a certain company. Well, they're paying for that placement. And so, again, I would call it sort of the advertising model. It's not advertising like you open it up and you see a soft drink ad or a cereal ad, but there's behind the scenes.
Embedded.
Right. They're getting credit for who they're referring out.
Okay. One other thing, I always wondered with Zillow, they have what they call their Zestimate of houses. And for the longest time, I always question some of those prices that I look at them. I think, wow, for this particular area, they seemed awful high. Maybe in other areas, they were true. But when you were talking about that flipping thing, wouldn't their Zestimate actually kind of prop up prices in the area that they would be buying in to kind of, if they're going to flip it, they could always point to the Zestimate and say, okay, it's worth this much. We bought it cheaper, but we're going to sell it for this much.
Yeah,
isn't that kind of a conflict of interest there?
Yeah, you've nailed it right on the head. It's a bit of a conflict of interest because it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy, right?
Yeah.
You if your model says it's worth $180,000 and you bought it for $150,000, then you think you got a good deal. And then if the market went higher and you could theoretically sell it for $190,000, well, then you're motivated by that profit margin. So if you sort of game the system, right, which they could, again, I'm not accusing them of doing it, but if you game the system a little bit, you sort of have a inherent conflict of how your business is being transacted. But to your point with the Zestimate, it's a bit flawed to begin with. And the more you look at Zillow over time, you'll see how that flaw happens. And I'll give the example of this. So around here, we've had for a long time, we had depressed prices, not much in the way of growth. And so you might look at a house, and this happened in my own neighborhood, where houses were selling kind of in the same ballpark for, 6, 7, 8 years. And we had someone put their home on the market, and it was way above market. This is going back like 4 or 5 years prior to the pandemic. And they were probably a good, $60,000 or $70,000 above what I would think was a fair price for their house at that time. Well, if you looked at the Zillow estimate at that time, the Zestimate jumped higher because their price was so high. So they actually,
the algorithm kicked in.
Yeah, you could actually see that the Zestimate had a flaw based simply on the above market price that the homeowner was asking. Well, that shouldn't have anything to do with the estimated price of the home, right? If I'm in a home that's $200,000 and I put $1 million price tag on my home, I should not be able to make my Zestimate go through the roof just because I put a pie in the sky estimate on my price. So
yeah, it's almost coincidental that the prices have been rising. I mean, the market has been great, but what feeds the Zestimate? What is really in reality the price of the house or the value of the house, and is it being artificially inflated by the Zestimate?
Yeah, right. Like we can all talk very calmly and know that when you have cheaper mortgage rates, you're going to have an improvement in home prices, and when you have consumers that were flush with cash and we're trying to leave urban areas and go to suburban areas, we can understand why there's buying pressure that would push up the price of the homes. But to your point, it's really hard to believe that all over the country we've had such great appreciation all at the same time.
Oh, it's amazing.
And, part of it's because of lots of liquidity and low interest rates, but yeah, I kind of shrug at some of it where you go, okay, but that, you just sort of think that house is a shoebox, and why did that shoebox just go up 35% year over year? Like it just
exactly. I've looked at some of them and I'm thinking, wow, either we were way behind and we're finally catching up, or there's something else wrong that's influencing these prices.
Right. And that's been it. There's been a lot of interest in the large scale home buying that hedge funds and private equity have been doing. And it again, look, they're not really buying around here. So I don't mean to imply that Niagara County's had an influx of these corporate buyers. But in lots of places, they'll go into a metropolitan area and they'll try to buy 2,000 or 3,000 homes and make money off of it, whether it's by renting them out or through the home flipping idea that Zillow was trying. It's just hard to believe that you've had this massive appreciation all over the country.
Right.
For homes, and especially for homes that are in desperate need of updating or repairs, it's sort of illogical to think that a home that has, 50-year-old siding and a 25-year-old roof that it magically went up 25% in the last 16 months. Like it just, there's no reasonable basis. Even when you talk about the liquidity side of the world.
Yeah. Well, I get a email from them every now and then, and it will say your value of your house just increased by 10%. And I really have to take it with a grain of salt because, yes, if it were on the market, it would bring something. But who can say that it's going to go up from this month and the next month by 10%?
Right. Yeah, ultimately, the success in the market over this pandemic period has been the large amount of bidders for any given house. And so really it's been a supply and demand mismatch where the demand for some of these houses has not been met with an adequate supply. And so the pricing has gone up. And look, that's great for all of us as long as it doesn't come through with a dramatic property tax increase. So, no one's complaining because our home value went up. We're all just sort of nervous about saying, well, what does this mean going forward?
Yeah. A high tide raises all boats.
Right. If everyone can just say, hey, my house doubled in value, well, sure, we'd all be thrilled. But it's all
City Hall.
That's right. It's all what comes after that becomes the challenge. Yeah.
All right, well, you answered my question. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the phone call.
I'll put Zillow on my watch list now and just kind of monitor, see what they do.
Yeah, again, you can sort of just check it from the decline perspective and pay attention to the volume, because what will probably happen is that the volume will start decreasing as it's hitting its lows, because there'll be fewer and fewer sellers finally willing to sell at that lower price. And so then it would generally have a little bit of a time of, and it could vary between, I'll say, a week and several weeks of some sort of consolidation, where it should generally trade in a fairly modest range of dollars per share. And what you'd like to see going forward then is accumulation pick up, where maybe more shares start getting traded, even though it's still in that price range. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, I would then say, for them in particular, you got to then look at where the next bump in enthusiasm would be for that company, right? So if they're backing away from the flipping business, then they're back to just the advertising model. And does it mean that in the next report in 3 months that they're going to, you know, dramatically report lovely numbers and then they're going to zoom higher? I would say probably not. But, you know, it doesn't.
They did announce that they were cutting 25% of their staff, too. So that's going to help.
Yeah, I would assume that that bump was really related to what they were doing on the home purchasing and flipping side of things. So, you know, if they're getting out of the business, they're going to cut that staff. But then you'll get back to just looking at the dynamics of what the business was prior to them getting into the business, which is, where's their revenue coming from? Is it increasing or decreasing? And so you want to find out, you want to find some factor that's going to say, put me in here because the good news is coming forward and I want to be in before that good news. I would tend to say that for what they have going on specifically, it probably doesn't mean that in 3 months they have the rosiest earnings report of all time. I would suspect that they still have probably a messy, crummy bunch of write-offs.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah,
right. Well, thank you for your information. I'll keep watching it.
Awesome. Thanks for the call.
All right. Thank you. Bye now.
All right. Thank you, caller. You are listening to Ask the Pro with Eric Conner from Conner Wealth Management here on WLVL 1340 AM 105.3 FM. If you have a question or a comment for Mr. Conner, you can feel free to call us at 433-1433. And on to the next, Eric.
That's cool.
Oh, my goodness. I was just reading some of this information that you had given me about what $1 billion really is. So now, we'll just talk about Elon Musk, because it's right here. He is now worth $255.2 billion. And so now, the next talking point is, if an individual is spending $10 million a day, he would consume $250 billion in 68 and a half years. Just because million and billion rhyme doesn't mean they mean the same.
No, it's now, incredible amounts of wealth.
Right. Now let's put that onto a trillion. I had it explained one time that like a million seconds ago would have been, you know, a couple days ago. Billion seconds ago would have been back in the 1970s or something like that, and a trillion seconds ago would be put us back into prehistoric times.
It's dramatically different as you keep moving those decimal points.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So the dollars are fairly amazing, and Elon Musk over the weekend someone had shown him a headline that said for $6 billion, for 2% of his wealth, he could cure world hunger. And this was from an entity of the United Nations. And his response was, well, show me where 2% does actually cure world hunger, and I'll sell the shares of Tesla today and give you the cash. Because his belief in within those numbers is they didn't. It was a report looking for a headline. And they wanted a sort of a jaw-dropping headline, so they put that in there, that 2% of his wealth would cure world hunger. And he sort of called him on it and was like, well, sure, if 2% of my wealth will do it, I'll do it tomorrow.
Yeah.
And there's been no response at this point because it's not – those problems are not just money problems. There's also – there's more that goes into it. You can cure the hunger for a period of time, but if you don't get those people into a sustainable living environment
right.
with income so that they can get their next meal and the meal after that and the meal after that, then it's not about curing it. It's really just about meeting it for a period of time.
Which always backfires.
Yeah.
It always right. backfires. Because I remember taking a cultural anthropology class in college. And we talked about taking food to the poor countries. So we'd give them food and full of protein. Well, what is protein to? It gives them a higher sperm count. So they get more people there. All of a sudden, we stop feeding them. Now there's more people starving because we helped their population growth and then stopped feeding them. So it's a cyclic thing that is... certainly unsustainable. I did want to bring up something about investing and how it is really, really important to have a professional do your bidding for you in the investing world. With this Facebook guy, he changed the name of Facebook to what, Meta or something
Meta,
like that?
Meta.
And people were starting to buy their own stocks and come to find out there's some little company up in Canada somewhere called Meta. That their stocks rose like 60 bazillion percent because people were buying the wrong stocks.
Yeah. Yeah. It is a common mistake. So Facebook changed its name to Meta, and in there, they also changed their ticker symbol. And that's how you buy the stock. So when it was Facebook, you would actually buy shares of FB, Frank Boy. And they changed Meta. Changed the corporate name to Meta and changed the ticker symbol. And I actually couldn't even tell you what it is off the top of my head right now because it does not roll off your mind the right way where it's like MRVS or something like that. And someone, you know, sort of was – I don't know what they were thinking by trying to purchase shares of a company with a similar ticker symbol. It did – in my head, it is just like a rookie mistake. This idea that you could magically buy some shares because they were cheap and that they would somehow blossom into shares of Facebook. Like it's a nonsensical thought, but yes, it's not something they should have been doing. And if they would have given it a moment's worth of thought, they would have known it was dumb. There's not any way to be nice about it. Right.
Like I
can't really mince my words and give them like half an ounce of credit. Like, no, it's just dumb that they bought something that was fractions of a penny or whatever it was.
Right.
With the idea that they were getting a piece of Facebook. It's completely illogical and it makes no sense. And, you know, someone benefited there, right? There's someone that was holding tons of those shares and got to sell them at a high price to those knuckleheads.
Right.
But it shouldn't happen. There's not really any way to explain it away except just saying like you made a really goofy decision thinking that you were going to outsmart Mark Zuckerberg. Like why you would think you could outsmart him in that way? I don't know why. Again, there's not a way for me to give any kind of half credit. Like, nothing. No, it's just dumb.
They get nothing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Keep your arms and hands inside the right at all time, kids.
So I've got clients that have shares of Facebook, whether it's from a long time ago or from more recent times. And I'll just explain on in my world what happened. So in their account, you could look on whatever day it was. Let's say on Monday. Of a week, it was Facebook. And then they announced that they're going to change their name and they're going to change their ticker symbol. Well, on my side of the world, our back office clearing firm, National Financial Services, just takes care of that change. There's no paperwork to do. There's nothing to act on. And so you end up seeing it's technically a reorganization. It's a corporate reorganization. And so you'll just see the shares of Facebook with the ticker FB leave the account, you know, going to zero. And on that same day, the new shares of the new reorged company, Meta, comes into the account. And so there's no paperwork to do, and there's nothing we have to change or update or anything like that. And it's simple and flawless, and look, that's ultimately what the clearing firms are there for, is to handle stuff like that. So, again, the idea that people were going to somehow outsmart Mark Zuckerberg and get into a penny stock position that was going to get them shares of the new company, it makes just no sense whatsoever. But, again, I'm just pointing out that for the clients, they don't have to do anything. There's no anything. It just changes behind the scenes, and that's fine. I mean, it's just like years ago, Apple was Apple Computer, and they changed their corporate name to just Apple. Or Google changed its corporate name to Alphabet.
Right.
Now, the nice thing about Alphabet, I will point out, is they did not change their ticker symbols. They kept the old Google ticker symbols, which Facebook should have actually done as well. They should have just kept FB, but that's just my opinion.
Right. Now, is there a benefit? Why are they changing the names of the company? Is there something behind that? Is there a thought? Is there a philosophy?
It's a good question. So investment-wise, it's meaningless.
Okay.
We'll start there, where just investment-wise, it doesn't mean anything. From the corporate philosophy side, yes. What they wanted to try to show is that there's more to the company than Facebook. So Facebook owns Instagram. They own the communication app WhatsApp, and they own the virtual reality headsets called Oculus.
Okay.
And so it's an attempt by them to show that there's more to themselves than just Facebook, the social media site. I would also say that they've had an awful lot of bad publicity. There was a whistleblower that came to 60 Minutes and before Congress, and she was happy to tell lots of bad things that Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg do behind the scenes, free speech issues, political discussions, hate speech, white supremacy, like lots of bad stuff came out in a short amount of time, and a lot of companies will sort of go to damage control, right? It becomes a PR move. And so they wanted to change. I would say they wanted to change their name for that reason as well.
That's fair enough.
Yeah. But again, from a pure investment standpoint, completely meaningless. If you liked them before, if you owned them because of advertising dollars before, you still have the exact same company. Okay. So from that perspective, no worries, no change, nothing that you need to worry about.
Very good.
Yeah. I'll just jump into one other thing. I know we've still got a few minutes left if anyone wants to call, but one other thing that's sort of been happening within the news and as we head towards new highs, like you pointed out, and there was new news as well today from Pfizer about a COVID pill that is remarkably effective about the symptoms and conditions of COVID. So it's not a vaccination, but it's a pill that is remarkably effective at reducing symptoms and reducing hospitalizations, basically on par with the vaccination. So not FDA approved, but it was the results of their clinical trials.
So it's a treatment, not a preventative.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. So ultimately, how that would come into play is you would need a lot of testing, you know, if you got the sniffles or if you've lost your sense of taste or smell, you'd take a test, you'd find out that you're COVID positive, you would take a pill. I don't know. Quite honestly, I don't know if it would be more than one pill. You know, maybe it's a pill twice a day. I don't know. Whatever.
Right.
Right. That part doesn't matter. But that you would then take it and you'd have more than 90% efficacy in terms of avoiding severe cases and hospitalization. Okay. That kind of news is out there. Match that up with an earnings report that came out I think it was after the close on Wednesday from Peloton. So one of the great stories of the pandemic lockdown was Peloton and the tremendous growth that they've had mm-hmm. with their exercise bicycle and the classes, the remote classes. Well, their earnings report came out, and it was not good.
It was pretty dismal, wasn't it?
It was dismal.
Well, didn't they get hacked? Wasn't there some hacking issues?
I don't remember that, but, you know, that – if they were, that's not a condition of the fact that
right.
their sales were down like 25%.
And they spent an awful lot of money in advertising.
Correct. Tons of advertising
yes.
and sales volume cratered. Well, why? Well, the answer why is actually really simple. We weren't locked up anymore, right? People could start traveling. People could go back to work. People could get out and move. And so I know that in the past we've had these discussions about the stay-at-home trade, right? There was a lot of money to be made in Peloton at the right time or in Zoom video at the right time.
Sure.
And I would say to people, sort of pay attention to how the market evolves over time. So where are we losing? Where are the losers showing up right now? The stay-at-home stocks, right? Zoom is almost, I don't know, 40% off its all-time high. Peloton is well off its high.
Right.
Those stocks are out of favor because they don't have revenue momentum anymore and they've got a sales problem. What's coming back into favor? Well, we've talked about the higher energy prices because people can get out and travel and airline travel is picked up. So that's known as the reopening trade. So I would sort of just put it out there that as you get more and more treatments for COVID, you're going to have more stress on those stay-at-home names, but you're going to potentially be able to rotate appropriately into the growthier parts as we reopen. So some people were really early to airlines or hotels, and maybe they timed it okay and maybe they timed it poorly. But those are the areas where you'd start saying, who's going to do well? Where are the dollars going to get spent? You know, there's the old adage for political discussions about follow the money. But that's also true on the investing side. Where are the dollars going to get spent? If fewer dollars are getting spent with Peloton, that dollar is going somewhere. Where's it going? And so whether it's movies, movie creators, movie theaters, whether it's hotels or Uber or whatever, that's some of the thoughts that go into creating a portfolio for yourself. And you got to, of course, always worry about the risk you're taking on and your allocations between stocks, bonds, and cash. But give it a thought experiment about where are those dollars in the economy going? Who's getting my hard-earned money? Is it the restaurant that I can now go to because I'm not locked up? Is it Disney because I can now take the family to Disney? Give that those – think that part through, right? Energy is taking more of our dollars at the gas pump. Yep. Look at the energy companies. They're up between 40 and 60% for a lot of them this year. Big difference. People weren't predicting it on January 1st. Mm-hmm. So just sort of wanted to wrap that into the discussion. We don't have a ton of time left, but I thought that was sort of important to get out there for people where they're thinking it through and they want to know, like, well, how do we keep hitting these new highs? Well, it's not always the same stock hitting a new high all the time. You get a rotation, and as you get rotating into a new area, as those companies grow, that's how we sometimes keep hitting new highs. It's not just the Apples and Amazons and Microsoft of the world constantly hoovering up new dollars in their share price. You get other names that are able to grow under the surface, and, you know, whether it's Tesla or Nvidia or whatever, that growth is what keeps moving us to new highs in the market.
Sure. And trusting your investment advisor to manage your money the way that is going to be profitable for you.
That's the plan.
That is. Well, listen, thank you so much, Eric. It's been a wonderful conversation. I look forward to speaking with you again in 2 weeks, talking all things finance. And I don't have your phone number in front of me, but if we want to get in touch with you,
call me anytime at the office, 439-1143.
Very good. Thank you so much.
Take care.
Yeah.
Broadcasting from Lockport, New York, USA, and proud of it. Hometown 1340 AM and 105.3 FM.
You're hired. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News. That's what a lot of Americans were told last month. 531,000 jobs created, and President Biden is happy about it.
America's getting back to work. Our economy is starting to work for more Americans.
Fox's Jessica Rosenthal has more live.